This is a very difficult time, but this will end. If we all do our part, we will be able to keep our hospitalizations lower. We will be able to get through this surge.
But that, my friend, is a pretty big if. This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. After strict lockdowns last spring, Governor Gretchen Whitmer is taking a much more hands-off approach this time around, in part because those orders from 2020 got struck down in court. This time, state officials are trying to appeal to our better angels. Whitmer and top health officials are strongly recommending that you keep older kids on distance learning, skip the sit-down restaurants in favor of takeout, and avoid unmasked meetups with friends. But they're not making you do these things, even though Michigan's infection rates are higher than they've ever been. And to throw another wrench into the works, the state has announced a pause this week on the use of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine after incredibly rare blood clots were linked to vaccinations in a small handful of Americans. A little later today, we're going to hear from a restaurant owner who's trying to figure out what this appeal to a voluntary lockdown means for business. But first, we've got Dr. Jonae Caldoun, Michigan's chief medical executive, is here to help us understand the state's plan for moving past the new surge. Dr. Caldoun, welcome back to Stateside.
Thank you for having me back.
The state's vaccine dashboard notes today that the number of doses administered of Johnson & Johnson vaccines is close to 200,000 people in Michigan. That's far, far lower than the number of Pfizer and Moderna shots in people's arms. It looks to me like about a 25-to-1 ratio. Although, obviously, Pfizer and Moderna are two-shot vaccinations, as opposed to the one-and-done with Johnson & Johnson. Dr. Caldoun, given that ratio, how big a problem is this pause in terms of the state's overall plan to get everyone vaccinated?
Well, I'm very concerned. Every shot in an arm is one step closer to having someone be immune and for helping us to fight this pandemic back and this surge that we're seeing right now. So, of course, I'm concerned. We want all vaccines in the state. We are ordering all vaccines that are available to us as they become available. And this is a setback. Of course, the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, as you said, it's a single dose vaccine. People don't have to come back for a second dose. So for individuals who may be homebound or have more transient living situations, this is certainly an easier vaccine when it comes to administering. But our vaccination efforts will still continue on, and we need to work incredibly hard to get more shots in arms across the state. And I'm pleased with our efforts so far.
Are you worried that this situation with Johnson & Johnson is going to have an adverse effect on the campaign to win over those who were maybe already hesitant about getting vaccinated?
Yes, we're certainly aware that could be the case. But again, it's just really important from a public health standpoint. As a doctor, we just make sure people have the information that they need about these vaccines. There's a very robust national monitoring program in place. 6 out of 6.8 million doses, they actually found that out. They're identifying what the problem may be. They will be giving us more guidance when it comes to what patients and providers should know about the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. So we will continue to be transparent. We will make sure we are sharing all the data about all three vaccines with everyone so that they can still make a choice. And hopefully that choice is still to get vaccinated. That is the way we are going to end this pandemic as quickly as possible and help us get out of this surge.
We've talked to a couple of epidemiologists over the past couple of weeks who agree with the CDC that the state should have firmer restrictions, a return to some kind of complete shutdown for a few weeks to allow the vaccine to catch up with the spread of the variant. I want to play something for you that Deborah Furr Holden told us. She's a professor of public health at MSU Flint campus, and she's also director of the Flint Center for Health Equity. And here's what she had to say to us on Monday.
This is the time for us to tighten up because we do have good quality vaccines who would be a game changer. The vaccines would be a game changer, but only if we're able to stop spread.
Dr. Caldoun, what's your reaction to that recommendation?
So I absolutely admire Dr. Verholden. She's one of my friends. So I certainly appreciate that. You know, I think that there are multiple tools in our toolbox right now. Michigan knows how to bring this surge down. I'm in regular communications with the governor, with Director Hertel about policies that would be impactful when it comes to this surge. Vaccines are an important part of bringing the surge down. But again, as the governor and I mentioned in our press conference last week, if we could stop all the gathering, limit our indoor dining in restaurants, we can pause on the youth sports. Those are the things that I think would help contribute to us bringing that curve down. And I continue to be in regular conversations with the governor and the director about that.
Right. A story emerged last week that a small handful of people who were fully vaccinated in Michigan still contracted COVID-19. This wasn't a surprise. You know, we know that vaccines aren't a suit of armor that completely protects against all forms of illness. There were a couple of hundred people who were hospitalized because of COVID, and there were a couple of folks who died. The headlines may not have provided the full context for comorbidities and other things that were going on in these cases, but they arguably did some damage to public's concerns about this. Do you think there's room in the public dialogue between the administration and Michiganders about risk assessment and taking a look at what is really going to be best for everyone's public health as people think about getting vaccinated?
Absolutely. I mean, we are all in this together. These vaccines are 95% effective. That means that there are going to be some people that do get COVID after they've been vaccinated. So that is not a failure per se. That is something that is expected based on what we saw in the clinical trials. The data that we're seeing, it still shows that a case of COVID-19 after vaccination is still quite rare. And so these vaccines are still effective in preventing COVID-19. But absolutely, I think it's important we all think about each other. That's why we still say after you've been fully vaccinated, it's best practice to wear your mask, wash your hands, as our numbers are surging like they are in the state, of avoiding large gatherings. All of those things are really, really important. And people do need to understand it's not just you. It's about your family members. It's about your neighbor. It's about people they may live with who may be more susceptible to getting severe disease and unfortunately losing their life to COVID-19.
I'm hearing the message that you're optimistic that people will make the right choices about continuing to mask up even after they've been vaccinated. That's in line with the administration's overall message of optimism. At the same time, Michigan has this standing right now as a national hotspot. Is there reason or evidence that can help us feel that optimism in this moment?
You know, I will say there is some optimism. Again, our 5.4 million doses of the vaccines in arms, and quite frankly, the fact that we've got more than two-thirds of Michiganders over the age of 65 who have had at least one dose of the vaccine. And that is why they are not being hospitalized at nearly the rates we're seeing of the younger population who became eligible for the vaccines later on. So vaccines work. We are getting vaccines in arms. I know Johnson & Johnson, a little bit of a setback, but we still have Pfizer and Moderna coming into the state. We are asking for additional vaccines in the state as well, moving vaccines to where there is higher numbers of outbreaks across the state. So I think that there is a reason to be optimistic.
Dr. Jonae Khaldun is Michigan's chief medical executive. Dr. Khaldun, thank you so much.
Thank you.
In a minute, we're going to introduce you to the owner of a Detroit restaurant that's taking the state's recommendation not to go out to eat seriously. His restaurant has actually one-upped the rules. It stopped serving people indoors and is strictly a takeout operation again. We'll be right back.
Support for Michigan Public's Stateside podcast comes from Lake Trust Credit Union, working to empower financial well-being for Michigan consumers, businesses, and communities. Committed to financial solutions and advice to support people and families. More information at laketrust.org.
Support for the Stateside Podcast comes from the University of Michigan's Go Blue Guarantee, committed to keeping a U of M undergraduate education within reach of all Michigan residents, regardless of socioeconomic status. Programs are available for all three campuses. More at goblueguarantee.umich.edu.
While the governor has not tightened restrictions on gatherings or numbers of people in businesses, we're hearing reports of some restaurateurs voluntarily stopping indoor dining amid a third surge of COVID infections. One of those restaurants is Slo's Barbecue in Corktown, Detroit. Joining us to talk about that decision now is Phil Cooley, the founder and owner of Slo's. Hey, Phil.
Thanks for having me.
How did you know it was time to put indoor dining on pause again?
We follow the numbers pretty religiously throughout this whole process, and we obviously have all seen the scary things happening in Michigan right now with the spike, and so this is something that we were talking about before the governor announced the voluntary closure, which was just considering that, you know, a mandatory one would be coming potentially. So we weren't caught off guard by any means, and it's you know, something we ultimately made for ourselves based on our current situation.
Yeah. At the same time, you're very matter-of-fact about this, but I've got to believe, as the person who's the owner of the business, like, this has to— was this a hard decision for you to make?
Yeah, it's, you know, this is one of many difficult decisions we've had to make throughout you know, the pandemic. Obviously, you know, we do great on the weekends, especially now during the pandemic. The disparity between the weekends and weekdays are considerable. You know, we'd love the extra money. We need it badly, and our employees need it as well. But, you know, the reality is these are unprecedented times, and, you know, whether it's the scientists that are doing the best that they can, or the economists that are doing the best that they can, or just the local entrepreneur doing the best that they can, to try to predict and understand and make the right decisions. You know, we're all flying a little blind, and throughout this whole process, we've erred on the you know, the side of caution, because it's our employees' health, it's our customers' health, and it's our health. And right or wrong, that's the decision we've been making, and we hope that, you know, this is something we can get through. The sooner the better, and this is the way that we personally feel we can do that. So we're, you know, reluctantly making this decision, obviously, but— and not judging others that haven't. It's just that we're lucky that we have obviously outdoor dining, excuse me, and carryout.
Yeah. You know, we have talked to some different restaurants that serve very different kinds of food. Obviously, it's been really tough for white table restaurants to go without in-person dining. How has business been for you? Is the barbecue crowd willing to do some carryout?
Yes. We've been fortunate, you know, before the pandemic, 10 years ago, we built a carryout location for commissary, carryout, and catering. So we're, you know, that location is set up for it. Grand Rapids has done, you know, okay. You know, when I'm trying to be positive, of course, this has been terrible for business for everyone, but, you know, a little bit better than if it were just dining, because we were set up for carryout ahead of time. You know, catering has been brutal, obviously, but carryout is certainly been the star for us throughout this whole process, and we've adapted too. We've done things like you order ahead of time in your neighborhood. You get your local neighborhood, you know, your friends to place an order as well. And if we get it like 10 carryout orders that we can bundle, the person who organizes gets theirs for free. So we've had great success doing these kind of bundled packages where we'll actually travel to communities. So it's like, you know, just like everybody, we've just tried to adapt as much as possible to fit into these new times.
That's really smart. As folks no doubt are able to hear, you're a family man, Phil. I know you've got young kids at home. What, if anything, does balance look like for a restaurant owner who has to be on location a lot, but also, you know, young kids who need you at home, too?
Well, you know, I'm lucky to have great partners. And, you know, folks definitely have that 3,000-yard stare. You know, they're the to say it's zombie-esque, it's an understatement. Folks are just absolutely taxed, and I totally understand that. I am not as day-to-day. I'm really only in the restaurant like once a week, where my partners are there 7 days a week, but I have other responsibilities in construction and things like that. So we're all in this together. And so, yeah, it's, you know, honestly, my wife, who has a side gig, that used to be her permanent gig, making jewelry, you know, because of raising a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old, quite frankly, she seems to have it the hardest out of anyone I know, because of, you know, all these limitations. You don't even think about it till you're in it. You know, the lack of play dates, the lack of music classes or going to the library to read books, and all the things that you rely so heavily on. Everyone's just, you know, really struggling.
Right. Phil, I know that some of your neighbors in Corktown have had to make very hard decisions to end businesses. Detroit Institute of Bagels closed just down the street. Does that make you nervous?
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's a big part of why folks love Detroit, you know, is the businesses and the things that you have access to of living in a city. And so the business community is plays an important role in that. And so we hope that folks are able to make it. And, you know, and they obviously, these are employers. So part of what makes, you know, living in the city possible is the job market. And so it's, you know, we're just hoping, you know, that we can figure this out sooner than later, because I know there's just tremendous struggle for everybody. I really feel for folks. We closed a business just before the pandemic, and because of that, you know, we were hoping to move somebody else in that, and it's been impossible. So I understand the pain and struggle of it, and hope for the best for everyone.
You know, there's a certain amount of, I guess, what I think of as mobility in the restaurant industry. It's pretty rare to find a place that has been making what it makes for, you know, 20 years or 30 years, not to say that we don't really treasure those businesses that do go the distance. But what is your take on the ability of the restaurant industry, or even just the neighborhood in Corktown, to weather the storm over the long term?
Yeah, I guess it's been adaptability, you know, and I think of some of those businesses that were there before us in Corktown, LJ's Lounge and Nemo's, and, you know, there are others, the Lager House. You know, these are places that have been so many different things to so many different people. And as the neighborhood has changed, they too have changed, whether it's like moving from an Irish bar to a rock and roll venue, or moving from a sports bar to in the neighborhood, walking to the stadium, to a sports bar that has transportation, or LJ's, you know, Robert, the owner there, worked the line of GM, and, you know, went from kind of being open sporadically because, you know, the bread and butter was his job with GM, to adapting in so many ways, from comedy nights to karaoke night to just many different things to who they are today. So I think that to be in this game, it's never, you can never rely on being who you were, you know, even 3 years ago. It's always about staying current and with your employees, staying current with the trends and yeah. So I think that's adaptability would be it.
That's key. I want to ask you a question, just as a guy who lives in Detroit, less as a restaurant owner. Do you think the governor should be restricting indoor dining, or is this the right way to let everybody make their own decisions?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I'm not in her position. And, you know, it's been incredibly hard this whole process and the fact that she's had to go through the things she's had to go through from the threats that have happened. It's just some people's behavior has been appalling. The idea that her life is threatened over it is just a very sad fact. And so, you know, at this point, after being in the pandemic for this long, it's hard for me to play armchair, you know, governor and tell her what to do. You know, we made the decision based on our reality. And I appreciated the closures as a Detroiter, as a parent. I appreciated the closures in the past. I felt it was necessary. I you know, on a personal level, I feel that we could have maybe got through this quicker had we just done it, been more strict at a certain point. But I'm not a part of the CDC. I'm not privy to the information that they have. And I tend to be maybe naive, maybe Pollyannish, maybe I'm too trusting, but I'm the person that signed up for my vaccine and signed up for the closure because I'm just hoping to move past this as efficiently and quickly as possible.
Phil Cooley is the founder and owner of Slow's Barbecue in Corktown. Hey, Phil, it's great talking to you. Hang in there.
Thank you so much. Be well and be safe.
And that's the Stateside Podcast. I'm April Baer. You can find the full Stateside show every day at michiganradio.org. Our executive producer is Laura Weber Davis. Today's episode was produced by April Van Buren. Our theme music is by 14KT, with additional music from Blue Dot Sessions. Thanks for listening. We're back in your feeds tomorrow.